It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night. A short show tonight on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. You can also always find us on the 101.3 ESPN app, and we're streaming on your Amazon Echo. So if you have Alexa, you can tell Alexa to just stream WCPV or 101.3 ESPN. So ask your Alexa to play us, and she'll do that for you. And we look forward to having you with us until 6:25. Short show because it's Red Sox and Yankees, first time of 19 for the 2018 season. It may not seem like much, or may not seem like it matters much early, but it definitely does. It definitely does. We told you why yesterday. We'll give you the lineups here in about 15 minutes as we get you ready for Sox and Yankees. One of the big stories of the early season, really a big story of the offseason also for the Red Sox, was what was the team going to get out of David Price? Not just on the field, but off the field as well. What kind of leader was he going to be in the clubhouse? Was he going to be a negative leader, which he was last year, and be somebody that weighs down younger players? Or was he going to be somebody that acted like the pro and acted like the all-star that he has been in the past and helped lift up this clubhouse under first-year manager Alex Cora? We got a little insight today. Alex Cora, talking on MLB Network Radio, talked about what he said to David Price. And it sounds simple, but he says, "This is what I told him before spring training. The circumstances around us are not going to dictate who we are as a group. We can control what we can control as a clubhouse on the field, and we can block out everything away from our group, and we'll be fine." So nothing revolutionary there. But what that reminds me of, we talked about this in the huddle at the tail end about Brad Stevens. This reminds me of a new wave of sports psychology. And we've had Brian Kane on this show before. Brian Kane is one of the most renowned sports psychologists in the entire world. And he works with a number of MLB teams. He worked with the Texas Rangers, the Washington Nationals, works with top college players, top college programs in all disciplines, all sports, from also in mixed martial arts champions, you know, former champion George St. Pierre. He works with everybody. He's a big deal. He's a UVM graduate who's made it really, really big time. Former athletic director at Mount Mansfield High School as well. And when I first met Brian Kane, it was the spring of 2013, and I was coaching at Norwich. And when he said essentially what Cora said, control what you can control, it's amazing how liberating those words are. Control what you can control. And that goes for on the field and in life also. And that is how I tailored my coaching career, as brief as it was, you know, 3.5 years after I met Brian Kane. That is how I tailored my messages in coaching. Control what you can control. And on the field, that means, look, I can't control my teammates. If my teammates aren't hitting for me, I can't worry about it. I can't become a victim of circumstance. I can't control what my teammates are doing at the plate. I can't control what they're doing defensively behind me. I can't control the umpire. I can't control the field conditions. I can't control the mound conditions. I can't control the weather. I can't control the crowd. I can't control what someone's saying to me from the crowd. I can't control my coach. I can't control anything. And so often it becomes easy for athletes, it becomes easy for people to become victims, to victimize themselves, because us making an excuse makes us feel better. And I was listening to John Taffer, the guy who runs Bar Rescue on what used to be Spike, is now the Paramount Channel. I was listening to an interview that he did on Barstool Sports a couple weeks ago, and he said, an excuse is just a justification for your failure. An excuse is just a justification of your failure. If you want to get in, 802-655-6672, you can do so on the Town Fair Tire text line. But it's easy for all of us to create an excuse. And from, hey, My catcher didn't frame it well enough. The guys made errors behind me. Well, nobody hits. The mound stinks. The weather is bad. I can't get a grip. All of those things. When you start blocking out what you can't control on the field of play, man, is that a good feeling, because you only are worrying about yourself. And David Price last year was somebody who we didn't see him enough on the field to know if he victimized himself on the field. But we know that off the field, he was kind of, he had rabbit ears. He was listening to everything. And the same thing happens in life. The same way you can justify failure in life is the same way you can justify failure on the field. Like, I don't like what that sports radio host said about me. I don't like how that television, you know, sports television show paints me. I don't like what Dennis Eckersley had to say about me. The injury is making me be this way. There's all sorts of rationalizations for why David Price was miserable last season. But as Alex Cora told him, we're not going to let other things that we can't control dictate who we are. And David Price appears to be following that mantra now. He hasn't been on Twitter once since the season started. This is a guy last year who saw everything and got combative with fans and became adversaries with fans on social media. So that is a step forward for him. He is not on social media right now. He is not going to allow what other people say. He has not allowed other people and what they say or what they do and how they treat him to impact him. And that is a really hard thing to do in life. Okay, I got really good at it in baseball, playing men's league baseball, coaching baseball, whatever it is. Since I heard Brian Cain speak and say that, I got really good at that. I don't put blame on anyone else anymore in sports. It's always about me. In life, it's a lot harder to do because, as we know, life is hard and there are other things that get in the way. That person was late and that impacted my ability at work. That person missed the meeting. That person didn't call for the interview. The phone line was bad and that made our show not sound as good. There's all kinds of other things that we can use as excuses for our failure. But at the end of the day, we just can't control it. And when you finally realize that, when that light finally goes on, it is a very, very liberating feeling. And it's a great feeling to know that you aren't weighed down anymore by what is going on around you, and you are focusing on just what you can control. And it sounds very preachy at the moment. Like, I'm hearing it in my headset. It says, Brady, it sounds like you're talking, you know, talking at these people, talking at your listeners. But it was a totally revolutionary talk. When I heard Brian Cain talk for 1 hour, I was all in on sports psychology. And that's why we have him on the show. We've had him on the show 3 or 4 times. We've had him on 3 times. I had him on once in Albany. I am totally a believer in that methodology because I've seen what it does for athletes and I've seen what it's just done for me in life. And it's great. And David Price appears to be going in that direction too. And what's good for the Red Sox is good for David Price and vice versa. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Again, 15 minutes away from the start of the pregame show. First of 19 meetings between the Sox and the Yankees. And as we lead up to that pregame show, if you are the Yankees, and we talk about Giancarlo Stanton and his struggles, and there have been numerous so far in the season. I mean, what, 3 for 26 last week, I think? Struck out 16 times, more than Joe DiMaggio did all of 1941. What is different for Stanton right now is his inability to hit fastballs. And that is what is good for the Red Sox at the moment. Chris Sale throws hard. David Price throws hard. He is struggling to catch up to the heat. Craig Kimbrell throws hard. Carson Smith throws hard. So you look at this and say, Giancarlo Stanton has been, you know, his bat's been missed a lot lately. I have no reason to believe that it's not continued to be missed, especially tonight against Chris Sale. But Stanton against fastballs right now is hitting 208. And it's a very small sample size. 208, though. He hit 294 against fastballs last year. I'm not going to tell you that that trend is going to continue all year. In fact, I don't think that it will. But if you're telling me that you can't hit a fastball, that is a major problem because that is supposed to be the strength of major league players. They're supposed to be able to catch up to all velocities. They're supposed to be able to hit all velocities. They're supposed to be able to make you pay for throwing fastballs. That is why teams, that is why pitchers have breaking balls, because hitters hit fastballs. So now, if Giancarlo Stanton is not hitting fastballs, then that becomes a major problem, because if you're not hitting fastballs, I'm not going to have confidence that you can go and hit the world's nastiest curveball. Buster Olney was on Golic and Wingo yesterday. He talked a little bit about Stanton.
You've got a guy who does so much damage on fastballs. The fact that that's the pitch that is perplexing him right now tells you it's just a matter of him just calming down, of having some success, of having some ease, because all this is a big adjustment, and I think it's going to take some time for him to settle in.
Jake in Williston says, honestly, I think Stan is just cold, and also adds in that that's why we created XFIP, which is one of many sabermetric things. And Jake, if you want to give me the condensed version of XFIP, I will share it with our listeners, but I cannot process it quick enough to be able to do that. So if you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. Jeff in Plattsburgh. Brady, don't these million-dollar athletes have trainers and doctors to work with them on focusing on their job? Making that kind of money, you should be aware of your surroundings. And I think that's a good point, Jeff, because teams do employ sports psychologists, team psychologists, whether they're sports psychologists or just team psychologists or counselors. But not every player is receptive to that. It's not mandated. It's not like in high school where I can say, we're going to mandate that you do this and use this. Players, and Brian Cain has told me this, some players buy in early, like I did. Some players buy in later when they realize they need to make a change, and other players never buy in, and maybe they never hit their potential. And Brian Cain said this to me, I'm not telling you that sports psychology is going to make you the best athlete ever. All I'm telling you is that it's another tool in the toolbox, and if you want to use it, it's there. And for some people, for people who do buy into it, it helps. Not everybody buys into it, and that's okay. But I'm telling you that what Alex Cora has told David Price, you know, quote, control what you can control, that is a simplistic way of looking at, you know, a psychological tendency. That's what sports psychologists will say. Forget everything else. Stop blaming the weather, the coach, the umpire, the pitching coach, the bullpen mound, whatever you can blame, stop blaming that. Only focus on you, and you'll get a lot better. And David Price is doing that. Players can't be under the team's control 24/7. Maybe we'd like them to be, but they can't. Remember Tom Brady and Gronk training at the TB12 Center with Alex Guerrero? We know Bill Belichick doesn't want that, but the team can't dictate everything that the player does. Jake in Williston, FIP. XFIP, field-independent pitching, to your point about not worrying about what goes on around you. Stanton cold in the weather is not a cold streak. Oh, I see. Okay. Stanton is cold in the weather, not a cold streak. So saying control what you can control, meaning that Stanton not used to playing in the cold weather. He's used to playing in Miami, so he thinks that that's what it is. So now I get it. Champlain Valley game night. 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com. The other thing about Stan is he's really just struggling on hitting pitches in the strike zone, okay? He has swung and missed at 37% of fastballs, and then you go back and look at what he did last year on pitches in the strike zone. I mean, he had a 780 slugging percentage last year on pitches in the strike zone. Right now, he's 56th in Major League Baseball on slugging percentage. Now, this is going to normalize. This is going to equalize. I get that. But it is a problem when you tell me that one of the best hitters, one of the best power hitters in baseball is having problems catching up to fastballs. Also noticeable, though, Stanton has played 10 games. Notable. 10 games with the Yankees. In the first 10 games for a number of other Yankees, players struggled too. It is an adjustment in New York. Babe Ruth, first 10 games, 257, one homer, 8 RBIs. No, one homer, 8 strikeouts, rather. And the Yankees went 4-6 in that time. Reggie Jackson, first 10 games, 256, one homer, 8 strikeouts. Yankees went 4-6. Jason Giambi, first 10 games, 211. A-Rod, first 10 games, 189. Stanton, first 10 games, 167. The big difference is the 20 strikeouts. I mean, 20 strikeouts is a lot. A-Rod only struck out 7 times, Giambi 12, Reggie Jackson 8. So we're looking at 2 to 3 times more Ks for Stanton, but those guys all figured it out with relative ease. A-Rod, people will disagree on, but A-Rod had some good, really good regular seasons in New York. Giambi, probably the biggest disappointment. We know what Reggie did, and we know what Babe did. All right, Red Sox, Yankees coming up here in a few minutes. Let's get you the lineups.
It's almost that time. Baseball is in the air, and the Red Sox are about to take the field. So let's give you the lineups and the pitching matchup right now on your home for Red Sox baseball, 101.3 ESPN.
We are 43 minutes away from first pitch at Fenway. Actually, 48 when we look at 7:05. So 48 minutes away from first pitch. Those Red Sox and Yankee lineups for the first time this year. The pitching matchup, Chris Sale against Luis Severino, a battle of aces. For Sale, he's 0-0 with a 0.82 ERA. He struck out 15 in his two starts. Well, he's 4-4 in his 12 starts against the Yankees in his career. He does have a 1.81 ERA, though, against them, so he's had some bad luck. The lineup behind him, Mookie Betts is in right, hitting .364. He's led off the last two games with doubles for the Sox. Andrew Benintendi's in left at .161. Hanley Ramirez, .324. He plays first base. J.D. Martinez gets his first look at Severino in a Sox uniform. .226, a homer, and four ribbies. Rafael Devers, .323, hits fifth. Eduardo Nunez, he hits sixth and plays second. Jackie Bradley Jr. hits seventh and plays center. Christian Vasquez is the catcher, hitting .269. And Brock Holt, he's at shortstop, taking the place of the injured Xander Bogaerts. For the Yankees, Severino gave up just one hit in 5 2/3 scoreless on opening day in Toronto, and then gave up two runs in 7 1/3 against the Rays. He was great at Fenway last year as well, allowed just one run in 14 innings. He comes into this game 2-0. Lineup behind him, Neil Walker's at second base leading off, .226. Aaron Judge is in right, hitting .289, two homers, seven RBIs. Giancarlo Stanton, .167. He's got three homers and seven ribbies. He hits third and plays left. Gary Sanchez is the DH, hitting fourth. Didi Gregorius is the shortstop. He hits fifth. Tyler Austin's at first. He hits sixth. Miguel Andujar, one of the Yankees' top prospects, he hits seventh, hitting .150. He does have three RBIs, though. Austin Romine is the catcher, and Shane Robinson just called up. He is in center field today. That's it for us. We'll send you out to Fenway next with your pregame show, Red Sox-Yankees. It should be fun, everybody. It's 101.3 ESPN.